The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Kennedy. Hugh Hewitt in Studio North. Good morning to you if you're watching on the Salem News Channel. Good morning to you as well. You're wondering, why won't my screen turn on? And it's because I've got some bum battery, which I'll change during a break, and it's absorbing my time. You're also wondering, why do I have headphones on? That's because my wonderful little bumblebee right here in my hand and the extender cord doesn't fit up here in Studio North, so I had to send off. That's why. That answers your questions. But if you're listening on the radio, you don't care. Boy, do I have a story for you. Sometimes you come down here, you know, and come up here, and you spend hours on the East Coast very early in the morning, and you dive in, you got all this great audio and all this great video, and I mean, there's great. And then 5 minutes before the show begins, you find the story, the lead, right? The lead, the number one story, and I send it out to the production team and contributing associate producer, deputy on an intern basis, Carl, suggested to me I leave out the term Gibraltar and yacht, but I'm not going to do that because contributing producer Carl is irresponsible. This is the headline as it appears this morning in the Telegraph. Killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. Now, if that's not the greatest lead in 100 years, no wonder it's at the top of the lot. There you have it. If you're watching this, that's just the greatest picture ever. Killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. Hell-bent on revenge after being hit by a boat. An orca named Gladys is now teaching others to attack. This is snakes on plane stuff. A vengeful killer whale called Gladys is teaching gangs of orcas to attack yachts around Gibraltar. Has already struck three boats, sinking two of them. It may read like something out of Moby Dick, but in this case, the truth is stranger than the fiction. Researchers believe that a female orca called White Gladys, kind of not very ESGDEI-ish, is seeking, what's her pronouns, right? Right? What is Gladys's pronoun? Is seeking revenge after being traumatized by a collision with a boat or being trapped in fishing nets. Her attacks are now being copied by the rest of a nearby killer whale population, which has learned how to ram vessels from their ringlet. Do you not know that right now, screenwriters across L.A. are sitting up in there. They're on strike, right? So they don't know what to do, and they're thinking, wait a minute. We won't have to pay any Jaws copyright. We'll find a way to see you need a bigger yacht, right? If I had a producer, we would now play the old skipper saying to you, if we're going to need a bigger yacht. The matriarch is tutoring younger whales in the art of sinking boats, raising the prospect of future generations continuing the war on humans for years and decades. Now, contributing associate deputy producer intern Carl suggested we just leave out everything about Gibraltar and yachts and go with killer orcas attack boats on coastline. And that would get everyone's attention going into summer. But that would be wrong, Carl. I'm just giving you the fact. You may not want to be in a boat off of Gibraltar today because orca, Gladys, the white orca, and I am not being racist here. I'm just reading the news. That's, to me, that's the greatest story in the world. And I found that last night, and I sent it around. I can't believe Carl suggested I mislead people into thinking it's an East Coast, West Coast, and Gulf Coast story. We don't have killer whales in the North Coast seas off of Lake Erie, off of Ashtabula and Milwaukee and Michigan. We don't have great whites. They don't come up that way. But that's a great story. There is someone in Hollywood this morning who can put the picture back up there. They're going to go find this right away. Killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. And if you have, if you don't know that that's a story, you don't belong in journalism. That I've been in the news business since 1990. That's the greatest lead I've ever seen. Killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. I may have to bring that up with Chairman Mike Gallagher when he comes in a little bit late. And I may have, Generalissimo, what do you think? How many of the guests today can we bring up killer whales off killer whales off Gibraltar attacking yachts?
Let's see. Peter Baker, no. Olivia Beavers.
Why not? The Times should. He's a New York Times guy. He should know about this.
He's covering the White House.
This might come up in the press conference. Should we brief Karine Jean-Pierre?
You think Karine Jean-Pierre is going to have a salient take on this? How about Joe Biden? Is the president going to have a salient?
Stop. Wouldn't you love to hear Karine Jean-Pierre talk about the orca threat off Gibraltar?
Hey, she's got nothing to add to that. She's been perfectly consistent on orcas for weeks now.
Okay. You play the part of Karine Jean-Pierre. I'll be Peter Ducey. So, Karine, does the president have any comment on the killer orca problem in the Mediterranean?
I've got nothing to add to that right now. I've got nothing for you.
What about, well, the yachts have been dented. They've been going down front page of the Telegraph, Karine. Is the president going to speak to this?
I have nothing that I can share with you this time.
You're like the mayor of Amity Island, Karine. You're denying the real threat that's in front of us. Are you telling me the president has said nothing?
The president has been very clear on this all the way along. I just have nothing for you at this time.
What's he said about killer orcas before?
He's been very consistent on the issue.
But what's he said?
I'll leave that to the record. He's been very consistent. I'm just telling you, he's been very consistent on this.
You know what? You're a terrible Karine Jean-Pierre.
That's exactly what she does.
She would have made up some stuff. Look, since we're talking to you, is orca meat allowed on the MyPhDWeightLoss.com diet?
Whale meat?
Yeah.
No. I'm sure it's protein-based, but I'm not, you know, part of the Aleutian chain. I don't exactly...
Well, there was a time.
There may have been a time, but
there
no.
There was a time.
I don't think whale meat is on the menu.
I blubber is blubber.
And you know, orcas are probably the leaner of the whales.
I think you just made that up.
No, I think...
You just made that up.
If you look at some of the other whales that are out there, the blue whale and some of the other bigger ones...
Well, you didn't say that.
The orca is much leaner...
Are you fat-shaming the blue whale?
I think the orca is...
You just fat-shamed the blue whale. I'm sorry, America. It's early, and...
I think the orca is the leaner of the whale blubber.
My PhD... That's like saying... Oh, that person over there has poor metabolism. You just said the blue whale has poor metabolism.
I think so, yes.
All right. MyPhDWeightLoss.com, 864-644-1900.
That's 864-644-1900.
Generalissimo is, in fact, an orca of a producer. And the whale that he's trying to, or the yacht he's trying to take down every day is this radio show. And he sometimes succeeds. That's the analogy. Don't you love that story?
It's clever.
It's not clever. It's news.
There's all sorts of ways you can take that story, yes.
It's news. Garrity, I can play. I got Garrity.
You can
Chairman
rip off
Gallagher a... has to know about this, right? Could be a Chi-Com plot. Do you think anyone from Wisconsin has ever thought about killer whales before?
No, but the angle to run off of this is, what does John Kerry think?
What does?
Because there's a whole climate aspect to this. Now,
this is blamed on climate. You're absolutely right. It's blamed on climate. All right. Since there are other stories, I'm going to go to my other stories first. Let's play. First of all you need to know about the debt limit. Leader McConnell told us yesterday. Gosh, he's a national treasurer. He walks out yesterday, and all these headlines. Oh, what's going to happen to markets? What's going to happen to the world when the United States crashes its sovereign debt? Here's the leader yesterday, cut 18.
Look, I think everybody needs to relax. The last 10 times we raised the debt ceiling, there were things attached to it. This is not that unusual. And is almost entirely required when you have divided government. regardless of what may be said about the talks on a day-to-day basis, the President and the Speaker will reach an agreement. It will ultimately be passed on a bipartisan vote in both the House and the Senate.
That's the whole story. They're going to reach an agreement. It's going to pass. I'm just not going to spend a lot of time wringing my hands and pretending that the Republicans are doing anything unusual. Joe Biden's just uniquely infirm for a president, and it's above his head, and someone told him, you know, some 24-year-old said this was a good idea to get close to the debt limit, and it's not, and eventually the grown-ups in the Democratic Party are going to give him some ice cream and say, Mr. President, sign the thing, and they'll do it. I'll be right back, America. Don't go anywhere. It's a wonderful Wednesday, because there's a killer whale orca story attacking yachts in the news, and I'm Hugh Hewitt. Morning glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Putting an earwig in you every single morning. Morning, Peter Baker of the New York Times. How are you, Peter?
I'm good. How are you? Good morning.
Good. Do you identify that song?
I remember the song, yes. Absolutely.
Can you name it?
Fade to Black. Fade to Black.
Very good, Peter Baker. You've won Yinz or Jeopardy. We've been playing Yinz or Jeopardy with the Pittsburgh audience this morning because on many fronts. Peter, I want to talk to you about your New York Times piece from 2 days ago, jointly authored with David Sanger, the headline of which is Biden sees coming thaw with China, even as he rallies allies against Beijing. And it reports that the president and some of his aides believe that there are factions in China, some of which want to restart the economic relationship with the United States, and a far more powerful group, that's a direct quote, that aligns with President Xi Jinping's emphasis on national security over economic growth. I know that's what they told you. I know you're a good reporter. I just think they're really quite extraordinarily wrong. This is like the hardliner, softliner debate in Iran when there turned out only to be the hardliners. I mean, how many people think there's a soft line in Beijing somewhere that we just are waiting to emerge?
No, that's a real question. They're going to test that, right? I mean, what you saw, of course, was a dialogue had begun to open to some extent when President Biden met with President Xi, and then we had the balloon incident, which the president the other day called a silly thing to do and a silly thing, I guess, to happen, and everything kind of blew up. Then, of course, Jake Sullivan, his national security advisor, met recently with his counterpart in Vienna. And I think that they felt they kept coming out of that talk. It wasn't exactly a friendly talk. There was a lot of back and forth about Taiwan and all the usual points of friction. But they felt like that could lead to a resumption of at least some sort of dialogue. They understand that China is not going to suddenly become our friend. They're very wary of China, obviously, particularly its alignment with Russia in this Ukraine war. They're very intent on trying to keep China out of that war to the extent that they have not so far provided the weaponry that we know of to Russia. But the strategy has changed. It used to be trying to drive a wedge between Russia and China. They have given up on that strategy. They're now pursuing a strategy they call the leverage strategy, trying to leverage China away from going any further with Russia than they already have. We'll see if that works. It's obviously a very big consequential issue.
Peter Baker, this is very alarming to me. Chairman Gallagher is coming up at the bottom of the hour. I'm going to talk about your story and David Sanger's story with him. Because this is doomed to fail. Xi Jinping runs the country. He just packed the Central Committee. I mean, I follow this fairly closely. I know you talked to Matt Pottinger. What did Matt say about the idea of there being two factions? There is no two-faction China. There is one faction, and it is Xi's.
Yeah, I mean, Matt was the result of the G7 in Hiroshima, Japan, where he felt that they had done at least a pretty good job so far of knitting the allies together, that the communique they came out with was very specific. Remember, just 2 years ago, they hadn't even mentioned China by name in a G7 communique. Now, at least they're being more explicit in saying the various things they're concerned about China and that they're not going to accept economic coercion and so forth. He felt like that was a good sign. At the same time, Matt, of course, has been President Trump's deputy national security advisor and one of the leaders of the China strategy in the last administration. He felt that there were things that the Biden administration had not followed up on that they still should in terms of policy. And so, you know, it wasn't a complete, rave review on his part, but he was happy that they were, getting the G7 to focus on this. Even at the same time, obviously, Zelensky's visit there attracted the most attention.
Did you ask Matt or other people like Gallagher, are there factions within the CCP that are hard line and soft line or anything like that? Because that's just, it's just not consistent with any China expert I've talked to in the last 4 years.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Matt about that part of it. That wasn't my part of the article, so I didn't explore that with him. But it's a good point.
But yeah, I just think we've got to avoid the idea that we pursued in Iran. And again, I don't doubt that this is what Team Biden believes. But it is sort of classic appeasement to always believe that there's somebody inside the regime that is actually evil, that is less evil, and trying to stop the evil regime from moving forward. I don't know if you've ever read Sir Christopher Clark's The Sleepwalkers. Peter, have you? It's he's probably Oxford Regis Professor of History, probably the greatest scholar of pre-World War I stuff. Have you ever had a chance to read that book?
I haven't. No, I should, I guess.
Yeah, you only write books. You and Susan only write books.
Well, I try to read a lot, but I haven't read that one.
Well, that one, it's amazing because the run-up, 1911 and 1914, is what we're living through right now. Nobody knows what anyone's going to do, and they're all dealing with a powder keg situation all over the world and miscalculation. But I think the best thing is to be on guard and to build up defenses and to realize Xi's going to run everything for another decade, maybe two. He's going to be their supreme leader. And do you think Jake Sullivan, Tony Blinken, John Kerry believes that? Or do they want to do a climate deal so badly that they're willing to invent partners to negotiate with?
Well, I it's a good question. I don't know that they I think they're fairly realistic about China and they're trying to see what's possible and what's not. They may not take the same point of view that harder line folks do, and they may be more willing to look for areas of cooperation than other policy people would be willing to. You know, I mean, it's a good question, right? You know, can you work with a hostile regime at the same time you contain a hostile regime? We tried that with Russia a lot the last 20 years, thinking that we could find ways to cooperate with Vladimir Putin, even if we kept, hopefully, him from going too far. And he's obviously shown that he wasn't into the cooperation part of things. So, you know, the lessons that we are trying to take from our experience in the last couple of decades are informing our conversation right now about China.
Yeah, it's a bipartisan assumption from 1972 until the last 5 years that China could join the international order, the quote, rules-based order. That's a bipartisan failure to realize what was going on in China, which is that the mask was dropping. And now they're our hostile ally and that they're at the center of an axis. The new axis of evil is Russia, China, Iran. But what I saw, and tell me if I'm taking too much away. I don't want to blame Team Biden if I'm overemphasizing. There are no two parties in China. There is only the party. And anyone who comes out and believes that there are people that we can honestly negotiate other than with a tiger is our dragon is wrong. And I'm afraid the Kerry clique is going to drive the bus here. I thought maybe it would get better because Wendy Sherman left. But are you telling me there are still engagement enthusiasts inside Team Biden?
Well, I wouldn't say engagement enthusiasts. What I would say is, you know, their philosophy is rightly or wrongly that they feel like they can open a dialogue to keep things from getting too out of hand, not that that means that they're going to take their eye off of the threat, right? That they could do both those things. Again, you know, history is full of examples where you've got to be careful about that. I mean, you're right to say that you can't assume that there are good guys in some of these places when you're dealing with a person at the top who really runs things. But I don't want to overemphasize how much they are counting on some sort of a separate within the government. I do think that they want to have a dialogue, whether they should or not. That's what they want to do. And they feel like it's safer to at least keep talking in some way or another, even as you try to make sure you get the G7 allies, as they've done, for instance, on board with resisting things like economic coercion and so forth.
Did you have a chance? I know that he's a friend, and you wrote this magnificent biography with Susan, your wife, about James Baker, the man who ran Washington. I don't know if he's given interviews anymore about China. Do you have a chance to talk to him about this?
We had talked about that with him, and he agrees what you're saying, which is that, you know, Baker had been among those in that bipartisan consensus, the feeling that if you bring China into the world economic system, that over time that would ultimately at least temper the regime and temper their politics internally, even if not making them a full-fledged democracy, and ultimately they'd be a better actor on the international stage. And he's one of the ones who says, look, that was a failure. That was a mistake. we were wrong to think that, and it hasn't worked out that way. And you're right, that was a bipartisan consensus. And the bipartisan consensus has now shifted, obviously, pretty strikingly in the other direction. There is a bipartisan consensus in Washington now, too, that China is, the preeminent long-term concern of American foreign policy, and that we needed to be more wary and take a harder line. That doesn't mean there's not differences between Democrats and Republicans, between Biden and a lot of conservatives about exactly how to do that. But that's interesting how much that consensus has shifted in Baker's representative.
It's shattered. I was a Bakerite. I was Nixon going to China in 72. For 45 years, I thought they would evolve, and they fooled me, and they fooled everyone. But now I'm just afraid that they're fooling everybody into believing that there's somebody other than Xi who matters, and that we've got to go back and build defense like Reagan did. Peter Baker, follow him on Twitter at Peter Baker NY.
I would hope at the end of the day.
Go ahead, play cut number three as well.
I would hope at the end of the day, when you would sit back and look, that the Democrats said they would never negotiate, that it'd just be a clean debt ceiling. I think those in America would say, good job. You know what? It's not that. So when you talk to your grandchildren, what are you going to tell them? You know what? There's hope. There's hope because they finally woke up that they got a spending problem. There's hope because there's people who are willing to do something about it, but not just do something about it, but fight for them. So what I want to tell you, the American people, I will not give up on you. This won't solve all the problems, but this is the first step, and I'm going to come back the next day and get the next step. So I would hope that we could get everybody on both sides out to vote for it, to actually put their partisanship aside and think of the grandchildren. Think of that child born today that got a $94,000 bill. How can you sit there and say, oh, I'm going to spend more of their money? Let's stop that. Let's make this economy stronger. Let's take care of the debt that we acquired because we have a responsibility to pay it. And let's stop doing this by the deadline, worrying whether we're going to make it.
The speaker is very smart. The speaker is very good at communicating good for the speaker. Let me remind you about Angel Tree. Hundreds of you are contributing $20, $50, some of you $200, which is a full scholarship for an Angel Tree camper. Many of you, can we put up the Angel Tree graphic there? The Angel Tree banner is at the top of HughHewitt.com. Give a listen to Angela from Angel Tree about how these children actually are impacted by their week at camp.
They're withdrawn. They're just, their head is kind of dropped. No eye contact. By the second day in the afternoon, they're starting to smile. They're starting to trust. And, by the last day of camp, some of them don't know how to express themselves. Some of them are crying. Some of them are hanging on to us that they don't want to leave.
Thank you for supporting Angel Tree. That week means so much to so many children. You can go to the banner at the top of HughHewitt.com and contribute. I'll be right back, America. Chairman Gallagher is next. We're going to talk to him about the New York Times story I discussed with Peter Baker earlier. Stay tuned. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Chairman Gallagher is joining me via video, and so he can't hear the music, and I can't put the earwig into his ear. Mr. Gallagher, welcome back to the program. Great to have you. As many people know, he is from Wisconsin, home of Giannis, who will forever be known for this.
There's no failure in sports.
All right. So we know that in Wisconsin, everyone gets a trophy, and Chairman Gallagher keeps coming back to explain the Wisconsin point of view. Good morning, Chairman.
What a wonderful welcome that was, Hugh. Good morning. Great to be with you.
Let's play that again. Just want to make sure that you hear it again, because this is the Wisconsin theme song again.
There's no failure in sports.
I just want people to know, in Wisconsin, everyone gets a trophy. Mr. Chairman, I had Peter Baker on earlier, and this is serious. Let me start with the Navalist story. Have you read the Telegraph yet this morning?
I have not read the Telegraph this morning.
Well, the lead story is killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. And apparently, white Gladys, that's her name, has been attacking and damaging yachts. Now, your eyebrows went up. Do you think the Chi-Coms are involved with this? Because if the killer orcas are taking on boats, you're a navalist, aren't you?
I am. I've actually been thinking a lot about this because an orca is an apex predator. And my good friend Matt Pottinger recently compared the Chinese Communist Party to a baby dolphin that we kept feeding and feeding until it turned into a great white shark. So I did an exhaustive Google search to see what animal in the water could defeat a great white shark. And putting aside the possible existence of a giant squid, an orca, particularly a pod of orca, is the only thing that could beat a great white shark. And if you say orcas with an Australian accent, AUKUS, it sounds like AUKUS, which is the alliance that we need to defeat the Chinese Communist Party. There's a lot to learn from these very crafty and intelligent creatures.
Well, you know, I didn't know how I was going to transition to the China story, but you did a very fine job of that, and I would like to thank you for that. But, you know, talk of winning wars is not consistent with the Wisconsin way as articulated by Giannis. Can we play that again?
There's no failure in sports.
No, so if there's no failure in sports, how can there be failure in war?
Point of order. Wisconsin won both World Wars and the Cold War. Douglas MacArthur from Wisconsin, pivotal role in World War One and World War Two, and George Kennan from Milwaukee articulated the strategy of containment that guided us, though it had various instantiations throughout the Cold War. So Wisconsin has won every war that America has won in the 20th century, Hugh.
Do you know that George Will says the Cubs saved freedom because Ronald Reagan went to Avalon Island to cover spring training for the Cubs. He stayed to become an actor and became famous, then governor, then defeated the Soviet Union. So you can sit down with George Will and have that conversation. Let's go to the China article that Peter Baker and David Sanger wrote. Biden sees coming thaw with China, even as he rallies allies against Beijing. And it goes on and it reads this. It was easy to miss Mr. Biden's prediction on Sunday of a coming, quote, thaw in relations with Beijing. It is far too early to say whether the president's optimism is based on quiet signals he has received. Here's the key graph. Mr. Biden's own aides see a struggle underway in China between factions that want to restart economic relations with the United States and a far more powerful group that aligns with President Xi Jinping's emphasis on national security over economic growth. This is the softliner, hardliner in Iran argument that has always been fake. There are no two groups in China, are there, Mr. Chairman?
No, there's a dictator. His name is Xi Jinping. And I really worry about this because where's the evidence for it, right? We've seen the balloon incident. And remember that the State Department, according to some Reuters reporting, really desperately tried to suppress the balloon incident, held back sanctions, held back export controls in an effort to preserve Secretary Blinken's visit to Beijing. What else have we seen from China? We've seen a raid on Bain & Company, Shanghai office. We've seen actions against Micron. We've seen the passage of a new intelligence law giving them basically unlimited powers over any business operating in China. So even if there is a faction, let's say, that favors engagement with the West, or that China is now open for business. Their finance minister, Liu He, went to Davos, said as much. It is to the benefit of the Chinese Communist Party and to the detriment of the United States and the West. How much more evidence do we need that the economic engagement theory has failed? We have over two decades of evidence. It's not going to produce a moderation in their behavior. So Biden sees a thaw on the horizon. I'm worried, as I've discussed many times on your program, that there is a war on the horizon because Xi Jinping will be increasingly emboldened to take Taiwan.
So this is nothing but appeasement again. And I want to remind people, appeasement is a theory. It is not it's not intended as a condemnation. It's an ideology that was in the saddle in the 30s, which is you can deal with the worst regimes on the planet. You can use carrots, not sticks. It never works. It has never worked. And the two factions thing, you know, I sniffed that right out, Peter Baker and David Sanger. And I don't doubt that that's what they believe. It's just so profoundly wrong to think that China is other than an apex predator, right? That's what they are. They're like, let's negotiate with the velociraptor and the orcas. That's not going to work.
It's the great white, Pottinger also had a great metaphor to say that great whites aren't offended when divers build cages around themselves in order to protect themselves. That's just the way it works. So we need to build guardrails around our relationship with China so they don't continue to steal our intellectual property. They don't continue to steal sensitive technology. They don't use our money and our technology in order to perpetrate genocide and build a military that is capable of taking Taiwan and capable of killing many Americans. This is what we're discussing on the Select Committee. And this morning at 9:30, we're going to have our first business meeting, which is a meeting to discuss and hopefully endorse a set of policy recommendations. So there'll be two reports. One is focused on defense and conventional deterrence across the Taiwan Strait based on the war game we did, based on the engagement we did with President Tsai. And the other is based on the hearing we did on the ongoing genocide in the Xinjiang Autonomous Region, and has a lot of economic focus recommendations. So I'm cautiously optimistic that our Democratic colleagues will join us. We've tried our best to make these bipartisan yet tough. And so the Select Committee is going to be tackling this issue of selective economic decoupling and de-risking. It comes down really, Hugh, we just at a basic level, as a matter of principle, we don't want to be funding our own destruction. And that's what we've been doing for far too long. And I'm worried that this revival of engagement, this zombie detente, zombie engagement, it really satisfies the literal definition of insanity, hoping for a different outcome, despite having tried this over and over again.
Oh, it's appeasement, and it didn't work in 36, didn't work in 37, didn't work in 38, and war came in 39. So, Chairman Gallagher, where can people get those reports when they come out today?
We'll post them on our website after, assuming we get an endorsement out of the business meeting this morning at 9:30. We've tried to make them readable, legible. Just one caveat, Hugh, because I can already anticipate your complaint that we didn't solve everything. This will not be a comprehensive list of everything that needs to be done in the Indo-Pacific. This will be a targeted list of things we believe the 118th Congress can pass and get done, and that President Biden can sign, and then we can iterate based on that. These are meaningful ways we can enhance near-term deterrence over the next year and a half, but there's far more that we will need to do, so we will not be done talking about these issues. I mean, let's say you put in place a near-term strategy to deter Xi from invading Taiwan. Well, you still need to confront the big issue we've been talking about for 7 years, which is how do you build a bigger Navy and Air Force? And it's just been like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football for the last 7 years. And we've had weak service secretaries, we've had weak secretaries of defense, and we haven't had a president who's a navalist willing to break through the bureaucracy and empower a secretary of defense to actually do the things that need to be done in order to ensure deterrence holds, not just for the next 2 years, but for the next 50 years.
Yeah, I've got a very smart retired Marine Corps general officer who sends me analyses on China. And he asked me, and I'm going to ask you, he didn't ask me to ask you, but I'm going to ask you, why are we not sending the harpoons that we're putting off into a warehouse, even if they're not perfect weapons? Why is the good the enemy of the perfect? And then why don't we have an end state describe? What is the end state of our China policy? What do we want the end state to look like, Mr. Chairman? Small question and major question.
On the harpoon issue, this will be addressed in our report, knock on wood. I mean, it's in the text right now. We heard testimony from retired Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, who has a creative idea for how you can MacGyver some of these harpoons. I think it makes a ton of sense, particularly if the harpoons, the variants that the Taiwans bought aren't going to get there until 2027 at the earliest. That's just too late. We need to be moving much faster than that. On the end state question, simplistically, we could go back to Reagan and say we win, they lose. I think really in the short term, it's obviously deterring Xi Jinping. It's preventing World War III, to put it more provocatively. Over the long term, you have to tease out what is winning the strategic competition looks like. It's preventing them from becoming the dominant power in Asia, as well as the dominant power globally. It is, to quote testimony we got in our first hearing, what could be called constrainment, preventing them from realizing their near-term territorial ambitions, as well as their long-term ambitions to dominate the commanding heights of the economy, of technology, as well as corrupt every multilateral institution, particularly the UN, so it serves Chinese purposes. And ultimately, what they want is the triumph of world socialism and the inevitable demise of global capitalism. So we should stop them from doing that. We should prevent them from destroying American leadership. And those are the stakes. That's why I've described this as an existential competition.
So I want to land that plane again. When the general says, what is the strategy of the United States? You said prevent war with China and stop any of their territorial ambitions, which would include Taiwan and the First Island Chain. What about things like the militarization of the shoals? What about their Belt and Road Initiative? Is there rollback? We don't want regime change. I don't think anyone's talking about that. But land the plane again so we can explain it to a Steelers fan.
Well, I think it's less about this or that island and more about command of the seas. They really have a concerted sea power strategy. And command of the seas actually gives you command of the global economy. It's sort of what enables their de-dollarization strategy and what they're doing with central bank digital currency. They want to be the dominant naval power in the world. So in the short term, it's deterring a war over Taiwan. And over the long term, it's maintaining the primacy of the free world and constraining their worst impulses.
Primarily honestly, through Navy power? Primarily through naval power?
Sea power is going to be, if you just look at a map of the Indo-Pacific, sea power is dominant. We need a sea power focused strategy because there's a lot of water on that map.
That's what my general friend was looking for, well articulated. For someone who believes in participation trophies in Wisconsin, that was well articulated. A we win, they lose strategy is not what Giannis believes in. I can't see your
Bjorkas. You got to be Bjorkas, you.
Bjorkas. Right? Attack yachts. Go read your Telegraph right now. Read my Twitter feed. It's got the Orca story, which is, you should lead off the hearing with that today. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. That's Chairman Gallagher. Thank you, Chairman. Olivia Beavers is next on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
In sports.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Olivia Beavers is with Politico. Good morning, Olivia. How are you?
Hi, Hugh. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm going to give you the gift of all time. The lead today has got to be from the Telegraph. It just posted. It's early. I don't know if you've read your Telegraph yet. Killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. Hell-bent on revenge after being hit by a boat, an orca named Gladys is now teaching others to attack other boats, researchers believe. What do you think, Olivia? Isn't that the story of the day? Killer orcas attacking boats?
I love surprise stories like this. So absolutely. I mean, if they're learning, we need to be watching them. That might be the next hearing we're going to have on Capitol Hill. Killer
whales. Well, Chairman Gallagher is interested. He's running with it. Do you even know what a land shark skid is? You're so young. Do you know what land shark stands for?
I don't know if I do.
It's an old Saturday Night Light skit from the 70s, and maybe it stayed on into the 80s. And there was a bet in the studio that you would not know. Let's go to your story, Olivia, about Speaker McCarthy, because for the first time in my life, I think I agree with Representative Scott Perry and Representative Dan Bishop, and I have never agreed with Matt Gaetz in my life, and now I agree with Matt Gaetz.
How do you feel saying that?
Yeah, so tell the people what you wrote about and why those three people might have said something with which Hugh Hewitt Republicans can agree.
Certainly, and you know, we're following House conservatives, we're following the Freedom Caucus, we're trying to gauge where they are each step of the way of these negotiations. And Speaker McCarthy is probably receiving the highest marks I've ever heard him receive from these groups. These Republicans who have previously opposed him for Speaker and have been highly critical of how he's led the conference, and now they're giving him really high marks. I've asked them about whether they've discussed the motion to vacate. They say that's not even part of the discussion. Matt Gaetz is saying the only person to ask you about that is the media, so he's sort of throwing it back at us. But we're trying to gauge if there's any chance that these conservatives see McCarthy making a deal with President Biden, whether they would revolt, whether they would choose to use this tool that they had pushed for when they were in the speakership fight, basically so that one member can do a motion to vacate and try to expel McCarthy. So at the moment, he's getting really high marks. And even watching the Capitol, just Hugh, to bring you into the moment for a second, there is probably at any point in time about 10 reporters waiting outside of McCarthy's office, waiting for him to come out. He'll usually give an update. He's been really accessible, which we love. Usually kind of the same comments that we've been hearing before. He'll make a credit card metaphor, and then he'll start walking, and the cameramen will start running, and then they'll run into a column because it's so chaotic. So everyone is trying to follow each inch of how these negotiations are going, and the conservatives are included in that.
And the Republicans believe, and I agree, that elected Republicans, and I agree with them, McCarthy has won this round. They passed a debt limit raise. Joe Biden has been frozen in time and just doesn't know what to do. The left is mad. The right is not mad. And there is literally no one talking about vacating the chair. And so I want to play for you Mitch McConnell quote yesterday. Get that on the record. Cut number 18 with Mitch McConnell, please.
Look, I think everybody needs to relax. The last 10 times we raised the debt ceiling, there were things attached to it. This is not that unusual. And is almost entirely required when you have divided government. Regardless of what may be said about the talks on a day-to-day basis, the President and the Speaker will reach an agreement. It will ultimately be passed on a bipartisan vote in both the House and the Senate.
So
and that's, Olivia, you quote Scott Perry as saying, the drama. And I love that quote because I just laugh at these stories. They're going to be a deal. We're not going to default and they're going to get enough people and there's not going to be a motion to vacate the chair. But that's not very interesting to write about, is it?
Well, I was asking him about motion to vacate, and Perry was in a pretty good mood. Sometimes he has no care to talk to me and he just goes, the drama. But you know, Republicans, like you said, are feeling very comfortable. I'm asking the battleground Republicans, I'm asking the conservative Republicans, because McCarthy was able to pull his Congress together, very narrowly pass a GOP plan to present to Biden, they all think they have the upper hand. And in the past, Republicans have faced blowback for trying to push for spending cuts with the debt ceiling. You saw it with Boehner and all of them have watched that unfold, but this time they're unified and they're watching the polling. And I think this is the round that we can win because President Biden has gone from we're not negotiating to we're not negotiating. And I'm putting that in air quotes because they were negotiating and they were just trying to pretend that they weren't. And then now they are negotiating and there is Republicans believe they might be able to win this round. So
yeah,
we'll see how it ends.
Yeah, we do have to see the end of the play. But Kevin McCarthy wins. Go inform all your colleagues about the orcas because they got nothing to write about, obviously. But if you tell them about the killer orcas, they'll be into that. And you need to read up on the land shark. Go to your YouTube, Google Saturday Night Live and land shark, and you'll understand why everyone over the age of 50 laughed at that. But you have no idea what I'm talking about. Olivia Beavers from Politico. Thank you, Olivia. Follow her at Olivia_Beavers on Twitter. Follow me to the next hour, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live in Studio North. Everyone knows I'm a generous guy with my leads. And Jim Garrity of National Review has always been respectful. He knows that I give people leads. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing fine, Hugh. I feel like I'm rolling for sensing traps in Dungeons & Dragons.
No,
I feel like something's coming
my way. You don't want to go on a boat. That's all I have. You don't want to go. This is the greatest story ever. I'm about to hand it to you. Have you already set up the morning jolt?
We could have the Jaws music in the background.
Yeah, if we had a producer, we would play the Jaws music in the background. Do you have the Telegraph? Do you subscribe to the Telegraph?
I don't want to disclose whether I have a legal subscription to the Telegraph or not. Let's just say I enjoy its writing a great deal.
All right. Well, then I want to tell you right now that the story on the landing page this morning, killer whales learn to sink yachts off Gibraltar. Hell-bent on revenge after being hit by a boat, an orca named Gladys is now teaching other orcas to attack, researchers believe. And they've hit three boats thus far. Now, is that not a great story, Jim Garrity?
Back in the days, the New York Sun is still around as an online publication, but I loved it back when it was in the paper version. And I don't know if they had a rule, but if you noticed it, they had a story about an animal on the front page every single day. Bottom of the front page, some wacky story involving a dog, some wacky. Well, this would be their kind of story. And the idea of orcas becoming like Occupy Wall Street and attacking people with yachts. These are populist orcas. This is class warfare.
You see, there you go. If you give this story to anyone who's creative, that's a creative leap. That's linking stories. That's right. You know what Gallagher came up with is that white whales can be killed by orcas and killer whales can be killed by orcas and China.
Why do you have to make it a race thing? Why does it have to be white whales that are the ones being legally?
Well, they
charged?
Said this is a white orca, and I don't know why we're talking.
Multiracial whales.
They are.
They're singular species, but yes.
It's a white Gladys is her name. Mr. Bidwell, a clearly larger matriarch, was definitely around and almost supervising. Mr. Bidwell told the Telegraph Before conceding, he could have to come face-to-face with White Gladys herself. The experience left off in awe of nature and power. He's on one of the attacked yachts. Are you old enough to remember Landshark?
Oh, yeah. Chevy Chase and yeah. Yes.
Unfortunately, poor Olivia Beavers, who's 20. I mean, she's not. I made a Landshark reference, and she had no idea what I was talking about. So it's unusual. So, Jim, let's get to the Landshark Bridge over to the – who is the orca in the waters off the yacht that is Donald Trump?
Oh, I think probably if it's anybody, it's Ron DeSantis. And I am pleased to see that, you know, the battle is joined. It becomes real today. Apparently 6 o'clock, the interview with Elon Musk. 8 o'clock, the interview with Trey Gowdy on Fox News. We are no longer talking about the expected presidential bid of Ron DeSantis, the likely presidential bid. Starting tonight, it's real. Live fire, so to speak. No, metaphorical, not real. Don't let anybody, you know, maniacs out there get the wrong message. And to give your listeners and viewers a sense of what today's Morning Jolt is going to be, look, there was some – the moment it was announced he was doing an interview with Elon Musk, some people were saying, was this kind of too online? Is this chasing a certain type of extremely online conservative and ignoring the average Republican primary voter? Look, when we talk about Ron DeSantis' presidential campaign, whether it's successful or whether it fails, when you write the book on it, the announcement is going to be a very thin chapter, maybe even just a couple paragraphs. It's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things. It may be – The one way it matters is that this is the one time a candidate gets to say, this is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is going to be my theme. This is going to be my focus. And after tomorrow, you know, starting tomorrow, you're going to have crazy questions. And what about this scandal back in Florida? And what about, you know, you lose control of the message. But for one day, you get control of the message. And that's what today is going to be.
If he was doing this 15 years ago. And you get to pick the platform on which you roll out your announcement. What would you have done 15 years ago if you're going into the Republican primary season? And you could pick any platform on which to roll it out.
15 years ago from now would be 2008?
Yep.
Okay. A lot of it then was about the Iraq war and terrorism and things like that.
Oh, but I'm talking platforms. You're using Twitter and Elon Musk.
All right, yeah. It'd probably be Fox News or CNN or something.
I would
like say
that.
It would not be. There wasn't enough media, so you know that would be. Yeah, it was like John Kasich or no, it was Mark Warner who did his a live event in Second Life. For those who don't remember, Second Life was the virtual reality for people who didn't have a First Life.
I didn't, but I do remember Rush Limbaugh, and I think if anyone could have gotten Rush to host their rollout, they would have gone on Rush's show to do their rollout. Elon Musk, it's a brilliant stroke by whoever is running Team DeSantis. Let's play for Jim what Elon Musk said about this yesterday. Cut number one.
In your time, I think it would be probably correct.
Okay.
So, we'll be interviewing Ron DeSantis, and he has quite an announcement to make. And will be the first time that something like this is happening on social media and with real-time questions and answers, not scripted.
What do you think of that? Because Elon Musk is a wonderful person to interview. I'm not sure he's a great person to conduct an interview.
It's going to be different. I think we could all agree on that. Earlier today, my colleague Michael Brennan Doherty was on Twitter, and somebody was saying, Elon Musk is some maniac. And MBD said, no, that's how people perceive him in your crazy left-wing circles. MBD said he's a 70-30, 80-20. People still think of him as cool rocket ships and electric cars
genius.
And stuff like that. So
genius.
I looked it up. The Harvard-Harris poll was just last week. And they said, do you feel favorably or unfavorably about Elon Musk? It's not quite as good as MBD said, but it's still pretty good. 45% of people said they feel favorably towards Elon Musk. 33% said they feel unfavorably. And that may not sound all that great, but that was the best numbers in the poll. That was the highest favorable, and that was the best favorable to unfavorable ratio. It is still a very – by standards of people in the political realm, Elon Musk is phenomenally popular. By the standards of, you know, Mother Teresa or something, no. But yeah, but it's still, I think he's someone that Republicans like and are intrigued by. And people who may not, you know, may think it's too early to pay attention to Republican politics might tune in just to say, hey, what's going on? What kind of things are they talking about?
This is brilliant because it's Wednesday. It's a Wednesday night. It will dominate two news cycles and it will go into the weekend. It will carry over to the Sunday shows. You know, some people say you want to roll out on Mark Levin's TV show on Sunday night on Fox because that's got the hardcore conservative audience that doesn't care about. And there is no Sunday night football to compete against, no college football. And that is true. I expect everyone to go and sit down with the great one. But I can't think of a better place to roll out your campaign than with Elon Musk on Twitter. I just actually think it's kind of a genius move, Jim.
I was thinking, so someone was observed, I think it was Paul Fahey in our mutual employer, the Washington Post, who pointed out that the 3 million people who watched Donald Trump's town hall is about one third the audience of celebrity Wheel of Fortune, to which I thought, I was like, okay, well, clearly if you're a Republican presidential candidate, you should probably announce your bid on celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
If you can't do
because,
that,
no. I was going to say, because first of all, I mean, the presidency is trying to solve the puzzle. And it makes sense because our finances, you should have practice buying vowels because our finances are entirely made up of IOUs.
That is very funny. Is that in the Morning Jolt?
That is indeed in the Morning Jolt. I'm like, this is where I test market. You're the focus group, dear Yu-Gi-Oh! Audience.
Well, that's very good. But I want you, do you have time to change the Morning Jolt to add the orcas?
It's a whale of a topic. Big.
Oh!
It takes up a lot of space.
Oh, you're going to cause me to blubber on now.
Ah, all right, yeah.
Can you finish this?
I can. Okay. All right, so here's the other thing. Some of my personal history, right? So way back when I worked for a wire service called States News Service, and one of the – we oftentimes operated as like the extra man for newspapers that had a D.C. Bureau. The Boston Globe was one of them. The Boston Globe had a fine Washington bureau. Folks like Nina Easton, Jack yes. Farrell, there were big names working there at that event. But they occasionally had stuff they felt like they needed to cover, and they didn't have the manpower. So let's call up Jim Garrity at States News Service. He'll cover that hearing. So
and
I ended
like
up on
Mikey
what I called
cereal.
Yes, and I ended up on what was effectively the seafood beat. Right whale regulations and how to protect them. Seafood fishery pickups. If it was coming up in the ocean, I was the guy who had to cover a hearing on it. And trust me, these were not like, you know, thrilling topics.
We're going to throw out a line into that and go deep because I'm going to spout some more connections to the orca story when I come back. Garrity and I have to talk about the rest of the field. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm not leaving you high and dry. We're going to put a harpoon in this and put an end to it. In the next segment on The Hugh Hewitt Show with Jim Garrity sticking around. Welcome back, America. Jim Garrity, the indispensable. You can follow on Twitter at Jim Garrity. Just said our last segment turned into the Lincoln-Douglas debates of dad jokes. You're right, Jim. But I have a mission as a breaking news anchor in the morning. Olivia Beavers has already thanked me for bringing this to her attention. So if you're going to scoff at the killer whales attacking yachts in the Mediterranean story, I can't help your news judgment. I really can't. If you're not going to halt the presses and go back and redo the jolt after learning about this, I don't know how to save your lead.
Wasn't Orca the name of the program that the Romney campaign was using for
yes!
its turnout back in
yes.
2012? Okay.
And it failed by 6 a.m.
Any big news about Orca is going to end up being overhyped. It's not going to live up to expectations. It's going to disappoint us deeply.
I do have to get to the real white whale that's out there, the debt limit. I want to play for you Mitch McConnell and then get your commentary on the debt limit coverage and the underlying story. Here's Leader McConnell yesterday.
Look,
cut 18.
I think everybody needs to relax. The last 10 times we raised the debt ceiling, there were things attached to it. This is not that unusual and is almost entirely required when you have divided government. Regardless of what may be said about the talks on a day-to-day basis, the President and the Speaker will reach an agreement. It will ultimately be passed on a bipartisan vote in both the House and the Senate.
That's not very interesting, Jim Garrity. Can't we talk about disasters in the market and having everything sink and go to the bottom and being tossed about by killer orcas?
Well, first of all, sometimes the pressure of the deadline is what makes the deal happen. And so the idea of that looming consequence may be what makes everybody feel a lot more reasonable and willing to come to the table. I'm getting a little bit nervous, although I do like seeing Mitch McConnell echoing the greatest quarterback in NFL history, Aaron Rodgers, and telling people, relax, R-E-L-A-X. And look, if McConnell's not worried, that does make me feel a little bit better. But Hugh, did you see the Politico story that was full of Biden White House officials complaining that the mainstream media has been far too kind to Republicans?
I did.
And that they're not explaining the issue correctly, and that the public doesn't understand the consequences. And that's why, you know, here's the, you know, I noticed that, that's a bad sign as far as I'm concerned. It says to me that they are worried about blame, who's getting blamed for this. It says to me they're worried, they're working the refs, they're whining, instead of recognizing, look, we have ended up into negotiations. We bet that the Republicans were never going to be able to pass anything, and they did. We're insisting that work requirements are ridiculous and you know, out of control and draconian, when in fact polling indicates majority of the public, including nearly half of Democrats, think work requirements are reasonable. We said spending cuts were unreasonable, and similar CNN poll just said 60% of the public, including 45% of Democrats, think there should be spending cuts. Biden has marched his party into a box canyon. He has almost no leverage. His approval rating is terrible. Nobody trusts him. He's a mumbling 80-year-old, and they got to come out with some sort of way. The only way, there's two ways this ends. Either he puts another counter proposal on the table and says, okay, you get a bunch of this stuff you don't, a bunch of stuff I don't want. I don't get to fund the 80,000 IRS employees. Maybe something on the students. So he makes some sort of big concession, and McCarthy says, there's my win. We're raising the debt ceiling, right? You know, that's one scenario. My fear with that Politico story, Hugh, do you think it's possible somebody is whispering in Biden's ear, if we hit the debt ceiling, if we default on the debt, if there's a terrible economic disaster, you can blame Republicans and win?
I'm afraid Corinne Jean-Pierre is. You know, I really do think they are a tone-deaf group of people, completely oblivious to the reality that the Republicans have won this round. And I got a minute left, Jim. McCarthy has won. And they just got routed. And it's sometimes it's better to take a knee and let the clock run out, right?
He was like, he has played his hand very, very well. And it's very hard to come out of a scenario where, you know, Biden does not make some major concession. And my fear is they really believe that somehow, well, this will be really bad. The president's approval rating will take a hit, but the Republicans will get more of a hit, and somehow we win in 2024. Which, by the way, it never works that way. Every time there's a government shutdown, both parties get blamed, right? There is no way which you, like in a game of chicken, if there's a collision, nobody wins, right? And it's kind of this, you know, this stubborn denial of reality. You listen to Democrats, they say, we really should have raised the debt ceiling back when we controlled the House. Okay, that's 6 months ago. What do you want to do in the here and now? And I don't think they really want to think about it.
And they have lost all. You're absolutely right. The orca is going to get the Biden administration. Jim Garrity, thank you. I will read the Morning Jolt. You have time to go edit, get the orca story in. But you got to go over to Jim Garrity on Twitter to follow him, and go to National Review to get the Morning Jolt. Go to Washington Post to read Jim's columns. Thank you, Jim Garrity.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.